Thank you very much, Adrian. And certainly that's all the gene therapy we have for this week, unless, of course, any of you guys have got a way to stop men needing to shave, as that ties into our question of the week with Diana O'Carroll.
The Naked Scientist's Question of the Week, brought to you in association with the How to Wisman Foundation, supporting science and education from Alpha to Omega.
This week, I neglected to shave my upper lip, just to see what would happen.
Hello, I'm Damon from Blackburn. Do cat's whiskers and human facial hair have anything in common in terms of their uses?
Aside from terrifying your boyfriend, what else can a human moustache do?
Hello, I'm Nick Crumpton, and I'm a zoologist in the Mammal Evolution and Morphology Group in Cambridge, and we're here in the university's Zoology Museum. Now, to a certain point, the whiskers on your cat's face and the stubble on mine look pretty similar. After all, they're both part of our pelage, our insulating furry coat. But whiskers are a type of specialised hair called vibrissae. Now, among other places, they're found on the maxillary, that's the upper lip region, and they come in both macro and micro forms. And in the same way as normal hairs, they're keratinous structures growing out of the skin, the epidermis. But whiskers tend to be far thicker, and as we know, they act as mechanoreception organs. Now, obviously, when someone pulls a hair out of my head, it hurts. And to some extent, all hairs act as mechanoreceptors for very light touch. So I can feel if something brushes very lightly up against the hairs on my arm. But vibrissae sport a suite of tactile-sensitive organs at their base, so any tiny displacement results in a far more complicated signal being transduced to the animal's brain, where an enlarged portion of its somatosensory cortex is concerned with interpreting signals as spatial information. Now, beardy chaps don't have this sort of specialisation within our brains, and in fact, humans are almost unique in being one of only two mammals known not to sport any vibrissae at all, along with the anteater. But it's recently been reported that the muscles used to move whiskers around are present in the human lip, but as very degenerate vestigial structures. Now, our beards are more than likely the result of sexual selection, like the mutton chops and moustaches on some old world monkeys, and they just help their owners look dashing, if maybe a little bit scruffy.
Moustaches don't appear to have much in the way of function for people, and generally, they only really appear on the faces of men. More interestingly, in some ethnic groups, males grow very little or no facial hair at all, so it looks as if human moustaches are there to attract a mate and act as a soup strainer. On the forum, RD posted some beautiful examples of moustaches, and you can find them at thenakedscientist.com/forum. But if that view's getting too much, why not don a pair of sunglasses?
Hello, I'm Philippa from Oxford. I heard that the pupil of an eye widens when it looks through dark-tinted glass. If this is the case, why do we wear sunglasses? Surely the eye gets more sunlight than it does without sunglasses, and this must be a bad thing.
If the pupil has to compensate for lower light levels, how is it that sunglasses protect the eye? Answers to Chris at thenakedscientists.com. You can Twitter at nakedscientists. You can write on our forum with thenakedscientists.com/forum, or you can check out the Naked Scientists Facebook page.
Diana O'Carroll, who will shed some light on the sunglass story next week.
Well, that's it from this week's coverage from the British Society for Gene Therapy's annual conference in Brighton. Thank you to our guests Simon Waddington, Maria Limberis and also Adrian Thrasher. Next week, we'll be joining the National Cancer Research Institute for their conference in Birmingham to catch up with the latest research from the cancer field. So if you have any questions on that, then email them to us. It's chris@thenakedscientist.com, or you can tweet them to @nakedscientists. Thank you to our production team this week, Mira Senthilingam, Tom Simpkins, Hannah Critchlow, Dave Ansell, and from Ben Vowsler and from me, goodbye.
The Naked Scientists comes to you from Cambridge University and is supported by the Wellcome Trust, the EPSRC, the Natural Environment Research Council, and UK FAST. For more information, look us up online at thenakedscientists.com.